I tell you, they work you hard down here in Ballarat. It feels like I've been talking all day. You must be getting sick of listening to us. I've never enjoyed listening to Susan preach so much in all my life. It was just, I love hearing her preach, but today it was even better. Just didn't she do a great job? Put your hands together. Hey, it has. It's been great to be here. And for those of you that are part of One to One, I'm looking forward to being here again tomorrow. I'm just trusting that God has deposited something in your heart. I'm trusting that there's a seed of faith that He's put in your heart. There's a prayer, believing for transformation, that He's put in your heart. You know, I just wonder even right now. Just take a moment to think of what is that big prayer that God is building in your heart. What is the prayer that He's just putting there? It's just a prayer. You know it's from Him. You know it's not something that's just your own imagination. It's not something that's out of your own selfish ambition. It's just a prayer that God keeps building. You just even maybe each session or each time you come to Him, there's just something that's building in your heart. What is that prayer? It might be a prayer for transformation in your own life. It might be a prayer for transformation in your community. It might be a prayer for transformation in the church, in the city of Ballarat. You know, what is the prayer that God is just building in your heart? I want to finish this afternoon just talking about persevering prayer. Praying until you see it happen. Praying until you see God move in power. Until you see power move from heaven to earth to bring transformation. To bring transformed lives, to see transformed communities, to see something transform in the heart of the church, to see something transform in your own life. What is that prayer? You know, I love the parable that Luke records in chapter 18. I love it because he says in verse 1 what the parable is all about. You know, sometimes as you read Jesus' parables, it's kind of like you get to the end of it and you go, well, what's all that about? You know, there's 10 virgins and 5 of them have got oil and 5 haven't got oil. And, you know, what is that all about? I went to Bible college. I was supposed to do a 3-year degree and I was a slow learner. It took me 9 years to finish. And I got to the end of 9 years at Bible college. And to be honest, I thought I was going to learn, you know, what all the parables were about. I got to the end and I'm still scratching my head sometimes going, what's all that about? But I love Luke chapter 18. I love this parable because in verse 1, Jesus tells us what the parable is about before he even tells the parable. All right, Luke chapter 18, verse 1, it says, Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. Why did Jesus tell this parable? That they should always pray and not give up. It's simple. Oh, I like it. He goes on to tell us the parable. He said, in a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, grant me justice against my adversary. For some time, he refused. But finally, he said to himself, even though I don't fear God, I don't care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me. That's a scary widow. And the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says, and will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he'll see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? And so Jesus tells this story, this parable about a leader in a community who doesn't care about God and doesn't care about the people that he's leading. He's got no compassion in his heart for the people that he's leading, and there's a poor widow in that town who is dependent on people like him. You know, there was no social security system. There was she obviously had no other support. And so, you know, when she's got someone coming against her and she doesn't have a family around her, she doesn't have sons or a husband there to protect her in this culture, she's completely dependent on a judge or a leader over a community to actually grant justice for that community, grant justice for her in that situation, because she's got no one else to do it for her. And this guy doesn't care. He doesn't care that this poor widow is being mistreated and oppressed. When she comes to explain the situation she's in and the help she needs, he says, "Lifeline's a free call. Go and tell someone who cares, because I don't." But when she didn't get the answer that she wanted, she didn't give up. This woman kept nagging him. Now, I need you to use your imagination today. All right, just use your imagination. See if you can picture this in your mind. There's a woman who needs your help with something, but you don't want to get off the couch and help her. And even though you don't want to get off the couch and help her, you don't care about what she wants you to do, this woman just keeps nagging and nagging and nagging and nagging. Can anyone who is brave just say, "I can picture this" this afternoon? Just a couple of brave people who don't have their wives sitting next to them who can picture this. She's like a dripping tap. Eventually, even though you don't care about what she wants you to do, she eventually wears you out with her nagging, and you get up off the couch and you do what she wants you to do. Some of you didn't need to use your imagination very much at all this afternoon, but just leave your lounge room and come back to Jesus' story for a moment. In Jesus' parable, this woman kept nagging this bloke, and eventually it says she wore him out with her nagging. Now, if you actually literally translate the Greek word that's translated there, bothering him and wore him out, the literal translation is she blackened his eyes. That's serious nagging. I mean, she nagged him so much that it felt like he'd been beaten up. I mean, if nagging was an Olympic sport, this woman would win gold. You might be sitting next to someone who would take out the silver or the bronze, but this woman would win gold. This woman kept persevering until this heartless bloke reluctantly decided to help her. And this parable is different to most parables. It's one of only a couple of parables which are parables of contrast. And Jesus is saying, if you know anything about God, you know he's nothing like the judge in this story. You know that God is nothing like this heartless bloke in this story. Our God does care about people. You read the whole Old Testament, sends prophet after prophet to tell his people to look after the poor and the widow and the oppressed. Because God cares about people. He always has. It didn't start with Jesus. The heart of God has always been to reach out to the oppressed, to those suffering injustice, to the broken. You know, his heart has always been to care for and to comfort people that are in need. And our God does care about the hurting. He does care about the oppressed. You know, our God actually loves to bring justice. He loves to bring healing. He loves to bring salvation to the lost. In fact, the only reason Jesus has not come again sooner is because he wants more people to be saved. In 2 Peter, it says that God is not slow in keeping his promises. Some people understand slowness, but he's patient. He's not wanting anyone to perish, but he's wanting everyone to come to repentance. That's the heart of God. Our God's nothing like the bloke in this story. And if this heartless leader will eventually give her what she's asking for, How much more will your Father in heaven bring salvation to the lost, bring healing to those that are hurting, bring justice to the oppressed? So keep praying, Jesus says, and don't give up. Now, the problem is we live in this instantaneous fast food culture. You know, we want what we ask for now. Now, you couldn't possibly drive down the road feeling hungry this afternoon. You've been very well fed. Why don't we just put our hands together for everyone who has been, you know, feeding us over the last night and day. But just imagine some stage in the next few days, you're driving down the road and you're feeling hungry and you just see the golden arches inviting you in. And they do that, don't they? They just invite you in. And you get to that, you know, that drive-through board, and you see a picture of a Big Mac up on the board, and it looks juicy, and it actually looks big, and it looks tasty, and you order it, you know, through the window, and by the time you drive to the next window and get your wallet out of your pocket, there is a Big Mac ready for you to eat. And you open it up, and it only looks half the size of what's on the board. It looks like someone has just sucked the life out of it, and it's just this shriveled up little mess. And probably, you know, some 14-year-old kid has spat on it as they're putting it together and squashing it into a package. But you don't care. Because you want what you ask for now. You wanted food, and this vaguely resembles food. You asked for it now. You got it now. And you throw it down your gob in world record time. Because that's what we want. We want what we ask for now. Not later. You see, we want food fast. We want information fast. We want answers to our prayers fast. We want God to answer that prayer that He's put in our heart now, not later. You know, I was talking to Charles and Sue last night, and Charles was telling me, Charles, you know, just 1 or 2 years older than me, and Charles was telling me, you know, when he was a young man and he was dating Sue, that, you know, Sue left Melbourne for a time to actually go and study in England for 6 months. And Charles was telling me that when he was apart from her, you know, he realized how much he loved her. And he realized that he didn't want to live without her for the rest of his life. They wanted to do life together from there on. And this was a little while ago, and he was missing her terribly, so he decided to write her a letter. So Charles sat down at his desk, and he took out a feather, and he dipped it. He dipped it into an inkwell, and he got out a piece of papyrus, and he wrote on that piece of papyrus, you know, "Dear Sue, I love you. I miss you terribly. I think you're a hottie. Will you marry me? Love, Charles." And then Charles folded up his bit of papyrus and he put it in a thing called an envelope. And then he went outside and he got on his penny farthing and he rode down to the local post office. And when he got to the post office, he paid for this little tiny thing called a stamp, and it had a picture of the King of England on it. And he licked the stamp, and he put it, you know, on that envelope, and he gave it to the postmaster. And the postmaster went out the back, and he took his horse and cart, and he rode that letter, you know, down to the port of Melbourne, and he gave it to a ship's captain, and the ship set sail, and it sailed for England, and it took 6 weeks for that letter to sail to England. And then 6 weeks later, Sue goes out to her letterbox, and she sees a letter in Charles's handwriting, and she thinks, "That's nice," and she opens it and reads it and thinks, "Oh, that's lovely. He wants to marry me. And so she too sits down at her desk. She takes out her feather. She unrolls her piece of papyrus and she writes, you know, "Dear Charles, you know, good to hear from you. Thank you for your kind offer of marriage. That's a big decision. I'll have to think about it. Love, Sue." And then her letter gets put, you know, horse and cart, set sail, you know, 6 weeks later. It's now 3 months later. And Charles goes out to his letterbox and he sees, you know, a letter in there and it smells like Sue's perfume and he can see that it's her writing. And he opens it with glee and he can't believe it when he reads, "I'll have to think about it, I'll get back to you soon." He's thinking, soon? The poor guy's been waiting for 3 months. I mean, I was just getting impatient listening to the story last night. We would never dream of waiting for an answer that long to a question or a request that we've got in this day and age. We wouldn't. These days, you know, when Charles is doing a tough crossword and he feels like a cup of tea, you know, he doesn't get up off the lounge. He just whips out his phone and he just texts Sue and says, you know, "How about a cup of tea for an old bloke? P.S. I still think you're a hottie." We wouldn't dream about waiting 3 months for an answer for anything. We just want to talk to someone on the other side of the world. We just get out our smartphone. We press a couple of buttons. And we can actually see the person that we want to talk to and we can get an answer immediately. Now, I'm not quite as old as Charles, but when I was a young boy, the only people who could do that were George and Jane Jetson. Who remembers George and Jane Jetson? Anyone remember the name of their dog? Free book for anyone who remembers the name of their dog. Astro the dog, free book. Tim's already got one, so whoever it was up the back can have it. Who remembers the name of the kids?
Elroy and Judy.
Elroy and Judy. We got some Jetsons fans and some old people in the room. You know, when I was a kid, this was a far-fetched fantasy. But for my kids, this is normal life. And my fear is that we've brought this instantaneous fast food culture into our spirituality. We ask for something now. We want God to do it now. And there's a reason that one of the fruits of the Spirit is actually long-suffering in the old translation or patience in the new translation. God is calling us to persevere. You see, one of the few people that still, up until just a couple of months ago, I would get a handwritten letter from was my 99-year-old grandmother. She would write me letters and she would put in there clippings from articles that she thought would be helpful for my sermons. They never were. But this will be the last, just a couple of weeks ago, was the first birthday of my 48 years that I didn't receive a handwritten card for my birthday from my grandmother with a handwritten check in it, which was much more helpful. And because my grandmother passed away just a couple of months ago at the age of 99. She's never Skype called anyone in her life. She was happy to wait for the letter to arrive. My grandmother prayed for me every single day of my life by name. Not just me, but every single member of our family. I worked out as something like 16,493 prayers that she prayed for me alone. This is a cool bit. When we gathered, you know, her big prayer was, "I don't want riches. I don't want anything, you know, spectacular in my life. I just want my whole family to know Jesus." When we gathered for her funeral, We're now spread all over Australia. We hardly ever see each other all in one place. But when we gathered for her funeral, four generations stood on a balcony at the end of the funeral, have just given celebration for her life. Do you know, every single person standing on that balcony is a follower of Jesus Christ and is actively involved in the local church somewhere in Australia. Seven of us are pastors. We had to fight over who was going to do the funeral. You see, I'm silly enough to believe that God heard my grandmother's prayers, and she prayed faithfully for 99 years. And she saw God move mightily in our family in a powerful way. I wonder if we've brought our fast food, instantaneous culture into our spirituality. And this message from Jesus today to keep praying and not give up is a really important message for us. I think sometimes we kind of, when we don't see an answer to prayer in the first 5 minutes, we lose heart. And we give up and we wonder, is God really listening? Does prayer really work? Does he really want to bring transformation to my life, to this community, to the city of Ballarat? You see, he encourages us to keep praying and not give up, not because I think prayer is about nagging God or it's about twisting his arm behind his back to give us something he doesn't really want to give us. That is not the picture of prayer. There is one or two exceptions in Scripture where it seems like prayer in the Old Testament changed the mind of God, but they're exceptions. It's not the norm. You see, I believe God calls us to pray and not give up because God sees what we can't see. God knows what we don't know, and God releases his power as we pray and we keep on praying. I remember, you know, when I was teaching RE in a state high school in Sydney. And it's a reasonably tough gig trying to get teenagers to listen to the gospel in a classroom in a state school. I remember a young girl named Shelley who would sit down in the front row just where Erin's sitting here, and she kind of looked like Erin. She was nice. She had a nice smile, and she kind of, you know, she was nice to people, and she would listen, and she would write notes, and you know, Shelley was a good kid. Most of the class were up the back chucking chairs out the window. You know, I had no control. And I'm trying to talk about the love of Jesus. I just wanted to punch kids in the head. Except Shelley. Shelley would just listen to everything I'd say. And I could see God's hand was on her life. She wasn't from a Christian family, but I could see God's hand was on her life. And I prayed for her pretty faithfully every Friday that Shelley had come to know Jesus. And I'd ask her, I'd say, you know, what do you think about this Jesus stuff, Shelley? And she'd say, oh, it's nice. I like listen to you, but it's not really for me. I'm going, God, you've got to be kidding. She's easy. Everyone else is hard. You know, God, you can do this. She's a nice person. And I remember I got to year 10, I taught her every Friday for 4 years. I got to year 10, she still, you know, wasn't a Christian. I remember arguing with God in my office before I went in to teach that class. And I remember that morning, God just say to me, I want you to claim that whole family for me by faith. And I'm kind of going, what? I can't even get Shelley to become a Christian. I knew her brothers. I taught them as well. They were the ones chucking chairs out the window. You know, now Brendan, you know, had dreadlocks. I was always catching him smoking dope down at the cricket nets and deciding whether I should dob him in or not. You know, he was that kid. I was always making up these cool surf camps for kids to come on and to hear the gospel. He'd never come. Anyway, that day, Brendan walks up to me. I'll never forget it. I was in the teacher's car park where no students were supposed to be, but Brendan was there. He was that kid. And he walks up to me, he's holding a pie in his hand. And it was his last day of school. Shelley was finishing year 10, he was finishing year 12. And he said to me, Jace, my life's a mess. I'm not sure what to do about it. But can I go on this camp in a few weeks' time with Matt, who was one of his mates? I said, of course you can, mate. I've been wanting you to come for, I didn't say this, but I've been wanting you to come for 6 years and you wouldn't come. Yeah, I'll never forget that Saturday night of that camp. I preached the gospel. Jesus died on the cross to save you from your sin. Doesn't matter what you've done in the past, he'll set you free. And he's risen from the dead to give all of you new life, new hope, new purpose. So if anyone here today, I'm not going to ask you to close your eyes and bow your heads, but I'm going to ask you to walk down the front here in front of all your classmates, all your mates at school, and say, I'm deciding to follow Jesus. Brendan stood up, dreadlocks still in his hair, walks down the front. He was the first one down the front. A whole bunch of kids got saved that night. He led Shelley to Christ about 4 weeks later. I got to see that whole family come to know Jesus. I got to go back to Sydney years later and marry a bunch of them. It's the first time ever I saw a whole family redeemed. You see, why didn't God answer that prayer for Shelley right at the beginning? I don't know the full answer. What I do know now is that God could see something I couldn't see. He knew something I didn't know. And he was releasing his power onto the earth in a greater way than what I could have imagined. You see, we still have a God who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine. He's not just able to do what we ask. He's not just able to do more than what we ask. He's a God who is able to do immeasurably more than all that we've ever asked or imagined. Now, we kind of know that. Most of you probably know that off by heart. You might have it on a screensaver. You might have cross-stitched it on your wall. You've got it somewhere written on a card in your Bible. We often forget the next part of it. What's the next part of the verse say? According to his power at work within us. Our God is able to do immeasurably more than all we've asked or imagined according to his power at work within you. You see, what God has done, he's put faith in you. He's put power in you. He's put a prayer on you that gets measured out as you pray. It gets measured out as you step out in faith to see God bring transformation on this world. There's something in you. There's a prayer in you that you've got to keep praying until you see it happen. You see, in Luke or in Matthew chapter 5, as the disciples are watching Jesus pray and all these cool things happen, people get healed, food appears, cool stuff happens when Jesus prays. The disciples say to Jesus, teach us to do that. We want to pray like that. And so Jesus says, pray like this. You know, Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come here on earth as it is in heaven. He says, when you pray, you can bring the power of heaven from heaven down to earth. And then a little bit later on in his ministry, he knows there'll be times the disciples are struggling in their faith. They're not sure what to do next. They're worried that prayer's not working. And so he tells them this parable. And he says, keep praying and don't give up. When I come again on this earth, I want to know that you're still praying. You've still got faith. You're praying and you're not giving up until you see it happen. And then if we go right to the end of the Bible in Revelation chapter 8, we see this picture at the hardest time. We think it's a hard season for us in church in Australia at the moment. There's an antagonism towards the gospel in general in our nation. I tell you, it was nothing compared to the persecution of the first century church under Emperor Nero. People were getting dropped in vats of boiling oil. People were getting burnt at the stake. You know, people were getting crucified. People were getting imprisoned. It was an awful time, a tough time for the church. And so at this time, Jesus gets his best mate John and gives him a vision into the heavenly realms. And it says in Revelation 8, John sees this picture of this big golden bowl. And in the bowl is all the prayers of the saints. They've all been collected. Not one has been missed. And they're all being collected in heaven. And then he sees this time when the bowl is tipped out and it says there's like claps of thunder and lightning that moves from heaven to earth as the prayers of the saints are tipped out over the earth. At a time when it was really tough and people were giving up on their faith, people were giving up on praying, Jesus is saying once again, keep praying and don't give up because prayer moves power from heaven to earth. And you might not be able to see what God sees right now. And you don't know what God knows right now. But as you pray, power moves from heaven to earth. So keep praying and don't give up. Don't give up. Two quick things as I finish and before I get us all praying this afternoon. The two keys that stand out for me in this parable and in all biblical teaching on prayer. Firstly, there's dependence on God. This woman, she's completely dependent on the judge to bring the change she needed. You know, Jesus chose someone for this story. Remember, he made it up. It's not a real story. He made it up to point to a heavenly reality. He chooses the most vulnerable person he can think of in that society. She had no power of her own, no power to change the situation for herself. She's completely dependent on someone else's power. That's what God's calling us to. He's calling us to a relationship of complete dependence on Him and His infinite power. And His infinite power comes from an intimacy with Him. I'll remember a few years ago now in our church, I was at a prayer meeting, and I just felt the power of the Holy Spirit just start to come upon me. And I wanted to stay in that chair. I really did. But I couldn't. And I found myself on my knees just crying out before God. And before long, and I hate being the center of attention in emotional times, I'm just laying on the floor sobbing my heart out and just confessing to God that I've made this all about me. I am leading this church and I'm living my life and I'm leading my family just on my wisdom, my strength, my power. And I've walked away from a place of intimacy with you, God, and I'm sorry. And God brought me to a place where I just kneeled before our church and I confessed that to my church. And it was incredibly humbling. This is the incredible thing about God, that God lifts up the humble. He wasn't there just pouring out accusation on me. He wasn't putting me down. He was lifting me up. Even I was confessing something that was so painful, I could just feel weight getting lifted off me, and I could just feel myself getting drawn into a new place of intimacy with Him. And God, I was sick up until that point. I was sick for 12 months, and I couldn't shake it. Going to all sorts of doctors. You know, as I just let go of what I'd been holding on to for myself and came back to a place of dependence on God and intimacy with Him, there's a new joy in my life. And you know, I've not struggled with that sickness ever since. He's calling us to a place of complete dependence on Him and intimacy with Him. And God's waiting for us to be desperate for His power. Absolute dependence on Him and intimacy with Him. And a desperation for His power. I want to ask you as we finish this conference, are you desperate for that transformation? Are you desperate? Are you desperate to see change? This woman was so desperate she kept nagging until she got what she asked for. What are you desperate for? What are you desperate to see God's power move from heaven to earth, to see transformation in your family, in your community, in the world? You know, if the indicator of our dependence on God is our commitment to prayer, this is a scary thing. The indicator of our dependence on our desperation for God is our commitment to fasting. It's not popular in our culture today. And I got to say, I hate fasting. I think food's one of the best things that God ever created. I remember the first time I fasted, I was just not seeing salvation in my ministry. I wasn't seeing people get saved, and I was desperate to see it happen. I remember God just tapping me on the shoulder one day, saying, "You know, you've never fasted." In the scriptures, it doesn't say if you ever get around to fasting. Jesus says, "When you fast, do this." I'd never done it. It just wasn't part of my culture. It wasn't part of my thinking. I remember God, you know, leading me to fast at that time. You can keep playing. I'm almost done, wherever that music's coming from. And I am finishing, promise. And I remember going away and staying in this house on a lake just to pray and to fast and pray for God to pour out salvation into the community that I was leading, that people's lives would be transformed forever. And I remember night one, there was this little possum ran along the railing of this house. I tell you, that possum was in grave danger. Oh, I was starving. I could picture him just rotisserating, just a little bit of garlic and olive oil. I remember crying out to God. I go, "God, I want a Tim Tam. God, I want a steak. God, I just want a dry old jam sandwich. I want anything. But God, I want you more. God, I want you more. I want you more. And it was one of the hardest 3 days of my life. I fasted for 3 days. And I began to see God move in power in my ministry. And you know what? It wasn't because God was up in heaven going, oh, Jason's a good boy. He's going hungry for me. You know what happened as I fasted? He transformed something inside me. I actually began to believe that when I spoke, Jesus had given me authority. That when I preached the gospel, there was an authority that went out there that was transforming people's hearts and minds. I began to minister differently, and I began to see different fruit for the kingdom. Hey, I just wonder if some of us, there's a big prayer that God's put in your heart, and He's calling you to pray and keep on praying and not give up, and He's calling you to get dependent on Him, to listen to His voice. God's saying, what are you saying to me in this? I'm so glad that Friday morning sitting in my office, I just heard God whisper to me, pray for that whole family. One of the great joys of my life. I wonder if He's just stirring up a desperation in your heart to see His power move from heaven to earth. See Him powerfully change and transform people's lives for all eternity. Can we stand together as we finish this afternoon? I'm going to get us to do something, I don't know, it might feel a little bit uncomfortable, but some wonderful people are going to lead us in a song in just a minute. But I wonder if as they just come up and just start to play, and I wonder just if there's a prayer that God's put in your heart. And today you just say, I'm going to pray that prayer and not give up till I see it happen. It might be a prayer of transformation for something in your life. It might be a prayer to see, you know, God use you to see someone else's life get saved, someone else transformed. It might be a prayer for your family. It might be a prayer for your workplace. It might be a prayer for this city. It might be a prayer for our nation. I tell you, I don't want to go to my grave without seeing revival in this nation, in our generation. I believe God is stirring up a revival spirit in the heart of churches today. But it starts with the ones. It starts with just reaching out to the ones around us, just one person who desperately needs Jesus. What's the prayer in your heart to see transformation right now? If you've got a prayer in your heart, I'm going to just get us to do something. Might put us out of our comfort zone a little bit, but I'm going to get us just to come and stand out the front. And in a minute, I'm going to get us to all pray out loud together, whatever your prayer is. But just start to come. Come on. Just start to come. Just say, I've got a prayer in my heart. Just I'm going to pray it and not give up until I see it happen. I might not see it happen tomorrow, I might not see it happen this year, but I'm believing God's put that prayer in my heart for a reason, and I'm going to keep praying, and I'm going to keep praying until I see it happen, until I see God powerfully move in that way. Come on, let's together. Just this isn't about the person standing next to you. Sometimes it just builds our faith as we start to all pray together. This is about you and God. It's the prayer that He's put in your heart. Come on, why don't we just speak it out? Come on, just begin to speak it out. Come on, all together. If we all do it together, it'll feel a little bit more normal. You won't be too self-conscious. Come on, just begin. Just begin to pray whatever God's put in your heart this afternoon. Begin to just pray it out. Pray for that person by name. Pray for that family. Pray for salvation to come. Pray for transformation in the community. Come on, just lift your voices. Lift your voices and just begin to cry out to God. Say, God, I'm desperate for it. I'm desperate for you, God. God, I just know you want to bring transformation. Come on, speak it out. Come on, one voice. Just lift our faith together. Lift up to Jesus the prayers that He's put in our heart. He hears every word.